Hey, well, welcome everyone. We're glad you joined us, and joining us today, as always, for a basic conversation is Father Jim Basic. My name's Brad Rieger. I have the privilege of hosting this podcast, and every episode is deeply enriching. We dialogue about some significant topics, and today's topic, Father Basic, is Jesus, according to Mark, wrestling with our demons. Now, the wrestling with our demons part caught my attention.
Did it?
Yes.
Why?
Because we all have, I'll just speak personally, I have demons that chase me. Sometimes they catch me.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming just about everyone has demons that are chasing them. So insights as far as how to... the perspective on demons and our imperfections and our human frailness is always interesting to me. And obviously we're going from the Christian's perspective and specifically with Mark's gospel.
Exactly. Well put, Brad. Yeah. So I often think of the way we deal with the Bible, the scriptures, the gospels has to do with us interacting with that text and, bringing a question to the text, not a complete answer, but a question. What's on our mind? What's our concerns? What's bugging us? What's pleasing us? What are our dreams? So we set up a dialogue between, in this case, between the Gospel of Mark and our own demons. So let's talk about that demon thing a little bit. I mean, one of the reasons we're doing this is because in Mark's Gospel, Jesus is seen as an exorcist. He casts out demons. So it's a perfect fit here. So we got to ask, well, what are our demons? And I think that sets up a personal examination for all of us. I think you put it well. If we're all honest, we'll find a demon, or maybe many of them. Right. And that is some dark force, something that's not integrated into our personality, something that leads us astray in life. So for many people, it might be an addiction. You know, in our culture, we talk a lot about people addicted to alcohol or to drugs or to pornography and so on. So addictions are common kind of thing. We seem like we're learning more about that as time goes on. So the psychological world is very helpful to us in talking about demons. And so there's all the personal demons, the kinds that our culture sort of pushes us in direction to say, to be greedy, to be selfish, to look out for our number one, to make sure that we pull our own strings and so on, a sort of rampant doctrinaire individualism. And so, I mean, we see, you know, selfishness, how it gets in the way. How greed could mess up our lives, our jobs and work site and so on. So yeah, a lot of personal demons. And then there's also what we'll call systemic demons, structures of evil in the world. So when when cultures don't act correctly, get out of balance and so on, it influences the systems, the structures of the thing. So I like to say that personal sin gets embedded in institutions, gets embedded in structures. So the great example, of course, in the United States is racism. So our whole history of slavery and so on, and how that continues to affect the way we see the world. So today we're so much more aware of sexism as a demonic force. The Me Too movement is so important, reminding a lot of us of trying to avoid being patriarchal in our treatment of women, trying to make sure we don't fall into language that's insulting to women and so on. So you could find all kind of consumerism might be big sort of demonic force. Having more things. We're going to be happy. How are you going to be happy? Have more things. Get more goods. Make more money. So that would be what I would think of as a systemic evil, what I'd call consumerism. So we got personal addictions, personal things were our, we try to be integrated people, but sometimes part of us doesn't get integrated. It's not under the sway of the gospel. It's not under the control of Christ. It's outside. It's against the gospel. In systems, of course, we're becoming more aware that we have to. That's why a lot of reform movements talk about consciousness raising. Got to raise consciousness. So maybe your wife has raised your consciousness on women's issues, you know, whatever. So, yeah, demonic forces, that's what we're bringing to the dialogue with Mark's gospel.
In your pastoral interactions with parishioners,
yeah.
and this is speaking more on the personal front, because a big part of being a priest, obviously, is helping people with the brokenness in their lives.
Yeah.
And was that a part of your ministry that you found incredibly meaningful, or is it? Did it get perfunctory after hearing people's brokenness time and time again?
No, very important in my own ministry, and hearing confessions, for example. You know, when I was first ordained a priest, I was very fearful of hearing confessions. I thought, this is going to be bad. I'm going to be judging people, and I don't want that. And I had a terrible foreboding when I was first ordained. And when I first started hearing confessions, I just automatically, God's grace, would say, God loves you. I didn't have to say, well, that's, you're terrible, or that's a bad sin, or don't do that anymore. God loves you. It just came to me naturally. And so confessions have never been perfunctory for me, just not by grace of God. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to listen and to pick up. And so that way, I learned a lot about the demons that people are dealing
sure.
with, especially with collegians. So often there were sexual matters, no masturbation, lack of self-confidence as a female, for example, in the culture. So, yeah, the counseling, I've drawn on that my whole life, confessions and counseling. And I always said that when I was counseling somebody, that my great desire was to avoid my Messiah complex, mm-hmm. which was to hear you for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but I got your problem. Here's what you should do. And I often found that's exactly what you shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
If I listened for another half hour before I spouted off my own wisdom, I often found out I did better that way.
Yeah.
Avoid my, Lord, free me from my Messiah complex. But yeah, that's a great source of what I know about human nature very often comes from, that's a great blessing of the priesthood, frankly.
Yeah. So what does the Gospel of Mark, what does it frame for us in the terms of?
You got the right questions today, Brad.
Yes.
Good for you. I need to say a little bit about the gospel, okay? Mark's gospel, we think, was written a little after the year 70. It's the first of the gospels. So time frame. Jesus died in the year 30. Most scholars say 30. And so Mark is written after the fall of, you see, starting in 66, the Romans were sieging Jerusalem. And they finally took it over in the year 70. That's a date we know from history. And so most scholars, the prevalent scholarly position is that Mark wrote after 70. So what you do, you read the gospel and say, does he show some indication that Jerusalem fell? In fact, one of the theories would be, why did Mark write his gospel? Because Jerusalem fell, and the Jews were scattered, and the Sadducees were no more, the collaborators, the zealots, they were done in, and the Pharisees had moved away, and that Mark maybe thought that we got to get this written down, because we're now so scattered. So he writes it around the year 70. He was not an eyewitness. neither was Matthew and Luke, not an eyewitness. That's important. We figure that he was writing to a Gentile audience because he sometimes explains what an Aramaic word means. And also what we see is he doesn't know Jerusalem. He makes mistakes about Jerusalem and the surrounding area. And so we commonly think that he's a Gentile Christian convert and probably writing in Syria and writing to a Gentile audience. Mm. And so trying to make clear who Christ is to that audience. So first, so that's our main historical record of Jesus at 70. The other, we have another important one by the Jewish historian Josephus, writing in the 90s, where he talks about Jesus. In secular records, we had one statement that under Pilate that a certain Christus was executed. I mean, you don't have it. So we come to this gospel. With a sense of faith that, and scholarship tells us that gospel, brief as it is, scattered as it is, ungrammatical as it is, gives us a substantially correct picture of Jesus, of the historical Jesus. That's been the scholarship through the 19th, 20th century, and we call that modern biblical criticism. Mm-hmm. Protestant world started that. The Protestants were way ahead of Catholics. It was only in 1943 that Pope Pius XII gave permission to Catholic scholars to do what Protestant scholars had been doing for years. That is, use scientific, historical methods of understanding whether the Christ of faith in the Gospels corresponds with the historical Jesus. So Mark's our basis, and Matthew and Luke copied from him. So, yeah. So that's literary. That's what we call historical criticism. Somebody might say, "Well, so what?" Well, that's true. I would say what the takeaway for many people is: modern scholarship, Catholic and Protestant, tell us the Gospels got it pretty right. That they give us a substantially correct picture of Jesus. Not that every detail, but the general thrust of who Jesus is. Now that's called the modern scientific method. And there's another method. Do you want to ask me anything about
no.
that? Were you getting that?
I'm following you.
You're following,
yes.
Good, I'm glad. A lot of scholars started thinking, well, sort of, so what, you know? So we know that he wrote after 70, now what? And so a lot of scholars, biblical scholars, started saying, well, let's use a literary method. Let's just read the Gospel of Mark like a classic work and with an open mind, and what are you going to get out of it? What are you going to see? Well, you're going to see he wasn't a great writer, for sure. It's sort of a breathless, and then this, and then that, and like kids would write, and this, and
it's a little stilted.
Yeah,
a little jumbled.
Yeah, it doesn't flow like Luke's gospel, for example. And so here, that's where we get down to, well, when you look at that gospel, what is it telling us about Jesus? You know, just read it as a story, okay. I think I remember when I had assignments in high school to read the gospel, I said, Mark, why? Because it was the shortest, right? It was the shortest gospel, and you're going to write something, and I had to write an essay on it or something. It was easier to do. So, some literary scholars say Jesus appears like a folk hero, somebody walking around subverting the ordinary ways of thinking of things. He does amazing things. One of Mark's favorite phrases is amazement. Everything Jesus does is amazing. People, when they see him work a miracle, they're amazed by this. They're surprised. Mm-hmm. So he comes across as a person who's subverting the ordinary way of thinking about things. And he's an itinerant preacher. He walks around. He travels, ends up traveling to Jerusalem and so on. So the gospel starts out, this is the story of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. First line, this is the story of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And throughout the whole thing, he's the Son of God. And
this is a strong intro.
Yeah. And it gets carried through, you know. You get to the end. I might be jumping ahead here, but okay. We get he's the Son of God, and he's preaching. He gathers these disciples together, Peter, James, and John, the fishermen, and so on, and he's trying to teach them, and they don't get it. They constantly don't get it. It's so obvious. One time, Jesus feeds 5,000 people, okay? So you're there, you're Peter, James, and John. You saw. Shortly afterwards, he's faced with the question of 4,000 people, and they say, well, what are we going to do? I mean, they just saw him feed 5,000 people. Now he's only got 4,000 to feed, and they say, well, we can't feed all these people. What are we going to do? They don't get it constantly throughout. People don't understand him. His own mother doesn't understand him. And Jesus goes out. I mean, he grew up in Nazareth. He, a late bloomer, we might say. He came, started preaching, but only in his 30s. And he's out there preaching and so on, and his mother and his relatives think he's gone crazy. Mark says that. They think he's lost his mind. And so they go out to get him, to bring him home. Get them straight, so they don't understand it. The disciples don't understand it. The religious leaders don't understand it. They attack him. Oh, and the Roman governing group, Pilate, doesn't understand him either. So he's walking around all the time trying to explain himself to people, and they don't get it.
And how does then? How do we bridge into the demon part? There's some exorcism parables and stories, right?
Right, yeah, beautiful stories, yeah. So Mark presents him as a active preacher, as a exorcist. An exorcist is one who casts out demons. So whenever he encounters someone who's ill in that culture at that time, the mind was, well, that person's possessed by a demon. That, in other words, they didn't have a psychiatrist to tell him that, well, maybe he's got a problem because his father was mean. You know, that wasn't their way of explaining things. You know, they explained things, they had demons. And the interesting thing that while the disciples didn't know it, the demons did. Great story is the one of the cure of the Gerasene demoniac. Gerasene demoniac was a guy who was so powerful and so out of control, and they tried to chain him and keep him under control, and they couldn't do it. And so he roamed around in the tombs and so on, and Jesus comes to him, and the demons inside of them say, don't mess with us, you know, leave us alone, because we know who you are. You're the Son of God. We know that. Don't mess with us. But Jesus encounters the Gerasene demoniac, and he casts out the demon, sends him into the swine. Right. They're legion. I say, who are you? We're legion. There's a bunch of us, and we're powerful. Sends him into the swine who go over the cliff. And then the interesting thing is the Gerasene demoniac then wants to follow Jesus. He wants to get into his ministry. He's so happy that he's freed of the demons. He's an ordinary person. They don't need to chain him. People think, how did this happen? They're amazed that it happened. And Jesus says, no, don't tell anybody. Just go home to your family. Well, the guy doesn't listen. He goes out and starts preaching about Jesus. But that brings up, Brad, what we call the messianic secret. That's the way throughout the whole gospel, Jesus always saying, don't tell anybody. He cures somebody, keep it quiet. You know, just tell your family, but nobody else. So it's interesting, what does that mean? One possibility is that Jesus didn't want people to get carried away with the idea that he was the kind of warrior Messiah that would come and get rid of the Roman occupiers. So he wanted to play. That's one theory. I mean, there's a lot of theories about the messianic secret. Right. That is, Jesus, don't tell anybody. Some people think that Mark exaggerated that part of it. But, yeah, anyway, yeah, the demons, he casts the demons out constantly of people, and they're freed then and can live ordinary lives.
And those interventions by Jesus, they're more metaphorical, right? Because it's casting out Satan, casting out evil.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call him metaphorical. I mean, the guy was a mess, and now he functions normally. It's not symbolic. I mean, we can look at the story and say, oh, yeah, he cast the demons out of the Gerasene demoniac. He could help me with my drinking problem. That's the payoff. That's what word comes together, and that Jesus is more powerful. We should get another structural thing in here, Brad, about the gospel. Matthew has five great sermons, and one that we're
Matthew most, or Mark.
You're right. Boy, you're on the ball. Did I mess up with Matthew's gospel? You're right. What would I do without you, Brad?
Well, I'm
to
prepared
keep me
for the
on
next
track.
Episode, so that's all.
I'm thinking ahead. Anyway, so we got more. You know, the confessions of faith, that who he is. So Peter, at one point, does get it right. He says, "You are the Son of the Living God," and that's throughout. When Jesus is baptized by John, God comes and the skies open up, and God says, "You are my beloved Son. People should listen to you." Same way when Jesus transfigured, he says, "You are God's Son, and listen to him." But the guy who finally gets it right most of all is the unlikely Roman centurion, a guy who's helping to crucify Jesus. And when Jesus suffers on the cross and finally expires, you know, giving over his spirit to God, the centurion says, "This truly was the Son of God." So the disciples couldn't get it. His mother wasn't too good on understanding his mission. Roman centurion does that.
Right. How do we do, let's take it back to a pastoral context now, as far as making this practical for people, all of us that are wrestling with various demons, shortcomings.
Yeah. I'd say the major thing we get out of this, of Marshall's, is that Jesus is more powerful than the demons. Christ's grace can overcome evil. That Jesus Christ came to save all people. He's a healer. He's an exorcist. And the demonic forces, as strong as they are, cannot overcome Jesus. He will win out over them. Divine grace is stronger than all the sin in the world, all the addictions, all the bad stuff going on in our world, all the demonic forces. So the main thing it tells the guy with a gambling problem, betting on sports, which seems to be a growing
more accessible thing. Now.
Yes,
correct?
Accessible.
You sit on your couch
perfect
and get in
word.
Trouble. Right?
Yeah. You know, so the guy's got an addiction to gambling, and so he starts out, but you don't have to give in to this. You know, there's ways around it. And so you start out with a confidence that, yeah, my faith will help me. Christ will help me. Going to Mass will help me. Praying to Jesus will help me, because his grace is powerful. And then that can lead to the next step. So the guy says, I got this gambling problem. I'm betting on sports and all the time, betting on the scores, outcomes, pitching performances, anything you can think of, and I'm messing up my life. And now I got to get into a 12-step program. So for a lot of addictions, the right place to go is to these 12-step programs. And as the alcoholics think, says, I'm powerless over alcohol. I can't drink, go out, can't have one, I'm going to have 10. So 12-step programs start out with their higher power. Well, we Christians name the higher power. That's God, the Almighty Father, who sent Jesus Christ into the world, and that Christ is the Son of God, the Beloved of God, and we should listen to him. So I would say a major thing that helps is, so let's take the systemic evil. I mean, it is so overwhelming, right? Wars, yeah. Partisan polarization.
Poverty.
Poverty, yeah. Racism, sexism. So overwhelming. You could easily say, well, I'm not going to mess with it. Why should I bother, you know? I mean, I can't do anything about it anyway. And Mark's gospel would say, no, don't do that. Don't give in. You know, do something. Do some. Try to work with Jesus in overcoming demonic forces. He'll help you. So don't give up on the process. So make sure that you, you know, you're praying for the people in Ukraine, you know, or you're supporting your congressperson who wants to have equal pay for women doing their job. You know, so do something, and with confidence that it's not wasted, no matter what it is. You might seem small, who cares? You know, it matters in the long run. And that to be on the side of Jesus is where you want to be. You know, that's so we're going to persevere in what we go about. Then, of course, then that means, well, maybe you're going to find a way. Maybe you're going to support your wife who wants to be a more active part of the Me Too movement. Yeah, honey, go for it. I'm with you, and I'll try to learn along with you, and so on. So there's practical ways that we could get involved that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us some perspective, and at a very pragmatic level, and using the Gospel of Mark and helping us in our spiritual
journey. Well, thank you for remembering that Matthew is different than Mark.
Tune in for the next one. We're going to be talking about Matthew.
Well, let's do one on Matthew, and you can make sure I don't mix it up with Mark. Brad, you're just great with this. I love doing these podcasts with you, and did we get enough takeaways here, do you think?
Is there something else that's been?
Well, I don't know. I mean, people have to say, well, why did I listen to this whole thing? Well,
Jesus over God overcoming the demons is a pretty big one.
Well, here's the faith. So here this guy's addicted to pornography, and he's going to say, I don't have to be convicted of this. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to remember women are persons, not objects. She's a person, and I'm going to try to grow in my respect for women generally. I'll try to deepen my friendships with women. I'll try to improve my relationship with my wife. And that will be the context for me then in overcoming this addiction to pornography. Oh, that's more practical. How's that?
Good practice. Always good. Yes.
Takeaways, Brad. Got to have takeaways.
Takeaways. Well, thank you for adding the takeaways. And let's do this again.
Terrific, Brad. Thank you.